So here we are with Nomi Prince in Guadalajara, Mexico. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. It's a beautiful day here in Guadalajara.
It is, and it, if you can tell in the background, there are no bullets flying and buses burning. So we're here in Guadalajara, Mexico at the Tec de Monterrey. And so we just want to talk about Nomi's upcoming book that she's working on, Artisans of Money, as well as how you see the current situation with the economy. So whichever you want to start with first.
They're interrelated. I since the financial crisis, which I don't believe is actually over, it's just been plastered over by a lot of central bank intervention that has been historically unprecedented. So we are in this environment now, of course, of zero interest rates in many countries, which has been precipitated by the Federal Reserve bringing rates down to zero in the United States, followed by the European Central Bank, the ECB, bringing them down to negative over in Europe. Recently, the Bank of Japan going negative, the People's Bank of China reducing rates. Mexico raised rates for 25 basis points when the Fed did for a second, but I don't believe that's the direction the Fed's going to continue to go in, because none of that intervention has really done anything for Main Street economies, for what I call foundation economies. They've only helped the private banking system, the financial system, and speculators invest in financial securities, the stock markets, the bond markets, the derivatives markets, and so forth. And so my book is really tracing that impact, both on the core countries and the ones that have to follow or choose to follow or must follow what's happening in the U.S. and Europe, and then how other countries are also trying to perhaps go against that grain, and what happens if they do that to their local economies, and what their position is in the global economy with this new sort of rise of central bank power. So that's the idea of artisans of money, of fabricating new forms of money, either by reducing rates to zero or negative, buying bonds to increase liquidity in the market, and how this really only goes to a top layer of financial institutions and interests and people, and not help preserve long-term growth, real growth, for the mainstream and foundational economy.
And who would you identify as, you mentioned the central banks, have you already identified, or perhaps you will with your research, who are the people we're looking at, that, you know, the big influencers of the global system and the global economy? You know, we have the Federal Reserve, of course, but who else would you identify as who really affect us and our countries that we live in?
Yeah, well, the knock-on kind of effect relative to what the Federal Reserve has done has been what the European Central Bank has done. And it does turn out that the head of the European Central Bank, Mario Draghi, is also happens to have been a former senior official at Goldman Sachs, which happens to be one of the most powerful banks globally and in the United States in terms of producing senior people in the government, as well as promoting and pushing for their form of agenda in terms of what the Federal Reserve does with rates. Hillary Clinton, who's the current possible contender for presidency on the Democratic side, has given speeches to Goldman. There's a strong association. It's produced two Treasury secretaries of the last three Treasury secretaries. So it's also interesting on the Federal Reserve level and on the ECB level, in other words, a central bank level, that kind of extension also exists. So now it wasn't just that we had the government elite level and the private bank elite level being in tight relationships. We have this extension into central banks who have been creating this artisanal money over the last 7-8 years since the crisis began, who are also a part of this.
And so where are we then amidst this crisis? Or we're in the eye of the storm, they say. So 2007 and 8 was just, you know, the opening act, would you say? Or where are we now, and what do you see coming next?
Yeah, what happened in 2007 and 2008 is that a financial crisis started because of what was happening in the U.S. It started because of what U.S. banks, in particular the largest banks, were doing, leveraging the subprime market, the mortgage market, but beyond that, creating esoteric securities, derivatives on top of them, all manners of complexities that they then sold and distributed throughout the world, even to, you know, small countries like Norway, which would basically have its small towns borrow money from its local banks in order to buy securities that U.S. banks were selling it. So you have this multiple effect of leverage that started from the United States. And when the collateral behind those securities started disintegrating, the effect was catastrophic, and we had the financial crisis, and that hurt countries around the world. So securities that were created by U.S. banks out of U.S. mortgages, because of how the financial system operated, because of how they sold and marketed these securities globally, really impacted individuals, small businesses, families, people in the world who had no idea what was going on. So that was the first leg of what happened in this crisis and how it became a global crisis. And of course it moved to different countries and manifested in slightly different ways. And then of course we had the central banks bring rates down to zero to supposedly instill liquidity or cheap money that would help the system. And what they said to us was it would help real growth. It would help individuals. The reality is it has only helped the same banks that were at the eye of the first storm. They've become bigger. The big six banks in the U.S. are bigger now than they were before the crisis, and now they have that extra help of cheap money availability to them with no strings attached, no accountability to put that into individuals, to restructure business loans, to help provide a safety net financially to the population in the U.S., and that has been something that has occurred and been copied, unfortunately, throughout the world. So I think what's happened in the year since that element of the financial crisis was that patchwork. It looks good on the surface. Central banks have no idea where to go from here because you can't go too much. You know, you can go negative, but there's only so much you can go negative if your 0% policy wasn't actually having the effect of helping foundational economies, only banks and markets. Your negative rate policy isn't going to do it either. And so I think once it is understood and why we have more volatility in the market starting last year and more so in the beginning of this year, plus a downturn in the markets this year, is the fact that capital is coming out of everywhere. And it's coming out more quickly of emerging markets. And so it's hurting economies like in Brazil and like Mexico first. But that in general, the U.S. economy is not strong either. It's only been projected as strong by people that run the Federal Reserve or the government. And inherently, it is not. And so I think once that understanding is permeated throughout the whole world that this cheap money hasn't done anything, which it hasn't, we will have a second leg of that crisis. And we are getting very close to that. The disintegration this year is a part. I think that will continue. And so you're looking at the next couple of years of a lot of high volatility and disintegration and a lot of negative strong drops along the way.
So we're in a lot of uncharted territory. And Obama would say you're peddling fiction, right?
Right. I'm a fiction peddler, according to Obama. Me and the Republicans. So yes.
And you do have a fiction book.
About the crash of 29, right. Yes.
One question that I have is, I meet Americans here in Mexico, and, you know, we know the Mexican government is corrupt. Every government is corrupt,
right,
to a degree. And especially we see it here. But what would you say with the panic of 2008 and the banks failing and then them being bailed out by the taxpayers to the tune of trillions, right? I like to sometimes say and argue that statistically, that's much greater corruption than what we see in Mexico. How would you respond? Because I have Americans that say, you know, Mexico's so corrupt.
Right,
corrupt in
right.
The U.S.
Right.
But statistically, what happened in the U.S. is on a greater level than what we see here.
Well, and also it's not just corruption in that way. It's also the lies that have been told in addition to the corruption, because what the U.S. has been told, for example, is that this zero interest rate policy of the Fed is for their own good. It's for the benefit of the U.S. economy, global economy, people, when in reality it is only benefited the financial institutions and the debt that the U.S. has issued, the treasury debt, the government public debt that has been issued, which will be on top of the U.S. for years to come, $4.5 trillion of debt is being held at the Federal Reserve. So that's $4.5 trillion of assets, including treasury bonds, that are doing nothing. The cash is completely tied up, sitting on the books of the Federal Reserve, 100% not going into the population. That's basically a situation where the government and the private banks have helped to create a hedge fund, really, out of the Federal Reserve, where they're simply one of many financial players, but they're telling the U.S. population this is for their own good. So there is a lot of corruption in just that $4.5 trillion, which is much higher than the levels of smaller corruption that might happen in Mexico or a country like Brazil, which also is discussed and is corrupt as well between the corporate sector and the government sector.
And overall, let's say on the Main Street level, America, we can see, is declining as an empire, but do you see a shift generally to the East? Because you're going to be traveling the world now. You are traveling the world for your new book, doing research. You see, like, I mean, historically, objectively, this is what happens. Power shifts after the end of an age to another. So do you see now power shifting to the East?
I think the period we're in right now is a fight to retain the power is today, where the U.S. of course wants to retain power and has, you know, allied itself with Europe, which it has been for you know, historically, and that's why the central bank policies have been so similar and so simultaneous first before going out to the rest of the world. And China, sort of on the other side of that equation, has been trying to figure out how to increase its autonomy, both from a currency perspective and an economic perspective in the world. Why I say it's a fight and not quite the beginning of a dramatic shift, it's a fight towards a shift, because the U.S., because of the domination of its policy and its position going into this crisis period, is also able to retain a lot. And because there's a lot of speculative forces predominantly coming from the U.S. and Europe, there is an ability to control China's economy just through the markets. Just through, you know, trading currency short or just through coming in and then extracting from businesses there, like they have done with other emerging markets. And so that element puts China in a weaker position, even though China is, you know, making establishments with Russia. We have the start of, much more coordination with Latin America and building infrastructure in Latin America and trying to do what the U.S. basically started to do in the 20s. So you have these two sides of what's happening. And the reason all that happened with China is because they saw the financial crisis unfold. They had nothing to do with it. They had nothing to do with subprime mortgages and toxic assets created out of U.S. banks and the aftermath. And so they started to move forward. But as the general global economy weakens, the fight to retain power from the U.S. side becomes stronger. And so that's one of the reasons that even though there is deterioration everywhere, the shift is very slow now.
And finally, what do you see for 2016?
Well, of course, we have the U.S. election, so there's a lot of a buzz around that and what will happen if various parties win, and there's volatility because of that. But mostly the volatility in the market, the chaos in the market, is due to the fact that central bank policy, zero interest and negative interest rates, there's only so much lower you can go, where if the core infrastructure of the economy or the collateral that is used to have issued debt over these years to companies, if that starts to break, there will be a knock-on effect. Bonds will default, delinquencies will come in. Individuals who took out a lot of credit during this time to pay their bills will find themselves unable to pay their bills. And all of that cumulative effect will cause banks, which have already fallen by quite a lot in the stock market, to continue to decline. And as they also make clear some of the losses, which they're not really fully open about, as they start to come out, that will create a knock-on effect of a downward spiral in markets in an upward path of volatility. And that's really what we're dealing with in 2016. There will be moments where central banks come in and do a quantitative easing cheap money move, and markets will jump up. Like in Japan, they'll go up 1,000 points and then they'll go down 1,000 points. So we will see again that desperation of central banks trying to maintain some sort of stability. But in the absence of a real economy and real ability to repay debts, and combining that with a fake economy and a lot of debt, that is going to create a crisis. Not this year, but you're going to see a lot more cracking to the downside, a lot higher volatility, which will move towards a crisis period.
I like to tell my students, get some popcorn and enjoy the show.
Right.
and prepare as best you can.
And try to insulate, exactly, as we were talking to your students, you know, to insulate whether you're running small businesses or your individuals, to try and really help your local businesses, your local community, each other financially, and do whatever you can to avoid participation where you can in things that are beyond your control in the financial global markets.
Okay, well, thank you, Nomi.
Thank you.